Kick-Ass Vets, sharing tips to help empower you to take control of your career. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Kick-Ass Vets Podcast. This is episode 18, Gold Standard versus Real World Medicine. I'm Anne, the founder of Kick-Ass Vets, and today we are going to talk about the, you know, the conversation about should we be performing gold standard medicine or real world medicine and what that means. It's a big conversation that you hear very often when you're talking to owners and bosses regarding new grads. Basically, they say new grads don't know real world medicine. It's one of the big complaints. They come out of school, they have all of these ideas, but they don't know how it's really like in the real world. And we want to talk about that conversation in this podcast. In order to have a conversation, we first need to make some definitions, because without definitions and without understanding what we're actually saying when we use these terms, we can't really have a conversation about it. So let's start with defining gold standard. What I call gold standard is doing every test possible that is needed to make a complete and thorough diagnosis of a case, unlimited in terms of time, emotion, and financial resources. So it's doing everything by the book, it's using the latest medicine and every diagnostic tool possible, and following every possible differential diagnoses down the end of the path until we get an answer, and then treating that diagnosis fully and completely to the extent that we are medically able. Then we talk about the definition of real world medicine. General practice vets and bosses and that sort of thing that have been out in the world will often do what they call real world medicine. And it's a combination of what they were taught in school, what they were taught by their mentors and bosses as they, you know, went out into the real world, and their own style that they have developed over time based on the limitations that have been put on them, mainly by clients. So, you know, emotional, financial restraints, and also based on what they have seen work and not work, and their own personal feelings about medicine and how much we should be doing and how much we should not be doing. So this real world definition isn't nice and clear cut like gold standard is, because it's going to be very different for each independent individual vet. What I really want to talk about is that I don't think we should be doing gold standard or real world medicine. What I'm going to do is actually change the conversation and say we should all be performing evidence-based medicine to our best possible ability. And what we're going to do next is just define what evidence-based medicine is. Evidence-based medicine is when you are doing the best possible medicine, and by the best, what I mean is the most current, relevant, and up-to-date medicine that you are able to do within your limited scope. So whether it's the owner's finances, whether it's time frame, whether it's availability, all of those things, it's doing the best that you can, but making sure that anything that you do is backed by up-to-date science. This is compared to anecdotal medicine, which is kind of more the real-world medicine counterpart. Anecdotal medicine is not based on studies. It's not based on, you know, double-blind, peer-reviewed studies. It's based on what someone thought might work one time. And that's what you see a lot on the internet about. You see a lot with breeders saying, oh, well, I've always fed my dog bones and they have great teeth, so therefore it must be true. Well, no, that's anecdotal medicine. That is not evidence-based medicine. So what I really want to do is change that conversation and talk about why evidence-based medicine is important and how that differs from gold standard and how anecdotal medicine can be very helpful but can also be very detrimental. In order to talk about anecdotal medicine, we need to talk about something called pattern recognition. Pattern recognition is something that is very, very commonly employed in medicine, both human and veterinary, and it's a huge part of how we work, how we limit our differential diagnoses list so that we don't have to run every test for every patient, And in human medicine, the statistics show it's correct about 80% of the time. So it's a very useful tool, and with experience, if you train your pattern recognition correctly, this can be something that can really help you limit tests that you need to do, get to a diagnosis faster, and treat animals and patients more effectively, more efficiently, and more economically, which is good for a lot of our situations. So what is pattern recognition? Pattern recognition is you have a patient come through the door, they have a certain subset of clinical signs, you do a bunch of tests, you get a diagnosis, you make a treatment plan, and they respond favorably to that. The next day, you see another patient come through the door. It has those same clinical signs, you do all of the tests, get a true diagnosis, do a treatment plan, and they respond favorably. Oh, well, this starts to seem like a pattern. Third day, you have an animal come through with the same clinical signs, you do all of those tests to make sure you're getting a true diagnosis, you make a treatment plan, and they respond favorably. So then on the fourth day, when you have that same animal come in with all of those same clinical signs, you say, you know what? I've seen this before. I probably don't need to do that test. You make a diagnosis presumptively based on what you've seen previously, and you make a treatment plan, and they respond favorably. And you assume that those clinical signs were attributed to that certain diagnosis. You have trained your pattern recognition. And this is great if you have a huge subset of cases and you see them all the time. And obviously, the bigger the sample size you have to train your pattern recognition, the better. The problem with pattern recognition is that A, as we said, it's only accurate about 80% of the time. So 20% of the time you're going to be wrong, even if, you know, all things considered. The other huge problem, especially in veterinary medicine, where we're limited a lot of the times about what diagnostics we can do, is that we inaccurately train our pattern recognition. So our pattern recognition is probably accurate much less than 80% of the time, which is our human counterpart version. And how that happens is we have, you know, that same subset of patients come in with those set of clinical signs. The first time we do all of the tests, we get a true diagnosis, we do a treatment plan, and there's a favorable outcome. Day two, instead of doing those tests again, we do minimal tests or no tests, and right away we just make a treatment plan and we give them medications and they respond well. But in that circumstance, because we didn't do those tests, we were actually wrong. But we don't know we were wrong because they responded. How many of our patients with diarrhea are going to get better without metronidazole? How many times do we give steroids to things that don't need them? So many times animals get better despite us instead of because of us. So therefore, it's very easy to inaccurately train your pattern recognition. And if you're more of a visual person, check out the blog Gold Standard versus Real World Medicine, where I've made a schematic about how pattern recognition should work and how we inaccurately train it. And in veterinary medicine, as I said, because we so often are limited in terms of finances and limited in terms of resources that the owners will let us pursue, we so quickly and so commonly inaccurately train our pattern recognition that our anecdotal medicine is so commonly wrong. And that's really what the crux of this is. Yes, it's very, pattern recognition is a very important tool, especially in emergency medicine. It's a lot more common, but it's really good to use pattern recognition for things where you're going to get a very easy to diagnose and accurately diagnosable answer. Like, you know, dog comes in collapsed, its gums are white, it's an old German Shepherd. You say, I wonder if it's a hemoabdomen. You put the ultrasound on, probe on, there's fluid, you get blood. Yes, it's a hemoabdomen. So that's something where you can very accurately train your pattern recognition and it's useful. But if it's something like, oh, this animal has a fever and you just give it antibiotics and steroids and say, oh, look, it got better. Well, did it get better because it was a virus and we did nothing? Did it get better because it was autoimmune and you gave it steroids? Or did it get better because it was bacterial and you gave it antibiotics? Or none of the above? Did it have a fever because it had heat stroke or it was stressed or painful or scared because they were doing construction next door? it's much better to train your pattern recognition on things where you can actually get a concrete answer that is indisputable versus training your pattern recognition to make anecdotal medicine calls in the future on things where you're not actually getting an answer. So I know that's a lot and it's a little bit wordy, but I think what I really want to get across is that pattern recognition is useful, but it's very easy to be mistrained, and we have to be very careful about how we're training our pattern recognition, because that ultimately is going to be the basis of our own personal anecdotal medicine that we perform, and we all do it. And the big thing that we want to do to try to limit this is to always try to perform evidence-based medicine instead of anecdotal. And that evidence-based medicine is, instead of saying, oh, I've seen this a bunch of times, I know it's probably this, let's just treat it with this, you're saying, okay, here's my list of possible differentials, how would I completely and accurately diagnose this, recommend that treatment plan to the owners, if they let you do it, great, if they don't, then you have to make your best guess. And I know that happens. I know there's lots of times where the owners won't let you do diagnostics, and then you have to try something. And that's when that anecdotal medicine comes in handy. But we shouldn't be striving for that. We shouldn't be striving for quote unquote real world, which is anecdotal. We should be striving to progress the profession. We should be striving to improve our communication with clients so that we can do more diagnostics, so that we can get to the bottom of answers. That will help us, A, not only treat more animals and make them safer, but we're going to dispense less antibiotics, which is hugely important to this world. Vets are a huge problem in terms of inappropriate antibiotic use and antibiotic resistance. And it's going to make us better clinicians and progress the profession instead of, you know, for how many years have we known that we shouldn't be using steroids in so many different conditions? And how many times are people just still giving steroids whenever you see, you know, a head trauma patient and things like that? So what does this mean in terms of what should be taught in vet schools? Because that's a big discussion right now. A lot of owners and bosses are frustrated with the schools because they feel that they are not accurately preparing students for the quote unquote real world. And they come out and they don't really know how to just treat a UTI. Well, you know, they do know how to treat a UTI, but they also know that they need to diagnose it first. However, a lot of that anecdotal medicine will just throw an antibiotic and a pain reliever at that. Well, maybe it was Stone's, maybe it was cystitis. So what Kick-Ass Vets is going to say is we truly believe that gold standard should be taught in school. And that's what I'm going to talk about now. Evidence-based medicine needs to have a foundation in gold standard. And unless you are taught gold standard in school, you will not know how to pursue evidence-based medicine in the real world. So there's a few different reasons why this is really important. Firstly, clients want it. There's a huge amount of evidence to show that the human-animal bond is growing stronger and stronger all the time. 65 to 90% of pet owners, depending on which study you look at, describe their pet as part of their family, and sometimes closer than their spouse, closer than their children. People really, really love their animals, and they are willing to do more and more and pay whatever it takes to get the treatment that they want. So clients want gold standard. They want to know exactly what's available, and they're willing to pay for it. So that's one main reason that universities should be teaching gold standard. Another, as we mentioned above, gold standard is the foundation for evidence-based medicine. If you don't know what gold standard is, you can't do evidence-based medicine. You can't recommend the best possible thing and then make secondary plans when owners can't follow that if you don't know what the best recommendation is. And it's impossible for schools, there's so much that they have to teach already. It's impossible for schools to teach every single possible permutation, and that's where that kind of art of practicing comes in. School is there to teach us the forefront of exactly what's available, what's medically indicated, and it's our job as clinicians to recommend that to owners, and when they can't pursue that, make secondary plans. But we can only make secondary plans that are effective and useful and accurate if we know what the best plan is to begin with. Another huge thing, especially as the world becomes more and more litigious, is legally you are required to offer all of our options to our patients and our clients. A huge percent of legal action is because referral wasn't offered early enough or gold standard wasn't offered. A lot of people want to pursue gold standard, and a lot of clinicians are not even recommending it because they are making judgment calls for their clients, or they are unaware that those options exist, or based on their anecdotal experience, they think it's going to be something else, so they don't recommend tests. Legally, that's where you're going to get into trouble when you don't offer everything. So you need to know what gold standard is so that you can offer it, put it in your records that you've offered it, and if they're declined, that's fine. That's no big deal, but you need to legally offer it. The other big thing is progressing the profession. Every single one of us should have the end goal of improving the veterinary profession to ultimately improve patient care. So when you're in school, you're being taught, in theory, the most up-to-date medicine. You know, you're being taught by the people doing the latest research before it's even hit the textbooks. You're taught by people that are at the leading edge of what's available. Once you're 5 years out, a lot of your knowledge is useful, but a lot of it is going to be outdated. So it's, even if you're trying as best as you can to keep up to date, very quickly you're going to be outdated and no longer be gold standard. So if you, out of the track, don't offer gold standard, how quickly is that going to fall behind? There's a huge disconnect between the research and what's recommended and what the latest up-to-date medicine is and what's being practiced in the average GP clinic. And the only way to try to progress the profession and try to get that information from the schools trickling down the line into the GP clinic so that we're all practicing some standard of medicine is to practice evidence-based medicine. And evidence-based medicine, as we said, is the best possible and closest possible solution to gold standard that you can do given that scenario. And it's based on evidence. It's based on studies. It's most up to date. It's not based on what I've seen before. So that's why Kick-Ass Vets feels that gold standard should be taught in schools. And when you have owners and bosses saying, oh, you don't know real world medicine, as a new grad, you should be proud of the fact that you want to pursue evidence-based medicine. You want to do that culture. You don't care that that dog has all the clinical signs of a UTI. You want to do a culture, and you're going to offer a culture to the clients because that is what is indicated and medically accurate and correct. And you should take pride in performing that evidence-based medicine. What if that animal has a weird bug in it? And then, you know, you're just going to have them come back and back. You're going to make that animal's life worse because it then has a resistant bacteria because you've thrown 5 different antibiotics at it before actually getting the accurate one. So it's really important for new grads to go out into the world and realize how valuable they are to the clinics and how valuable their new gold standard evidence-based medicine is, and really try to push that and make that part of their practice instead of just so desperately jumping on to the quote-unquote real world or anecdotal medicine that their mentor, trainer, boss is pushing and recommending. Like I said, pattern recognition is important. Yes, there's lots that you can learn from them and learn from someone that has experience, but there's a lot that you can teach, and we should all be working together as a team to try to eliminate this quote unquote real world, eliminate as best as we can anecdotal medicine, and try every single case to be as close to gold standard as we can based on what owners are allowing us to do. And that is what evidence-based medicine is, getting as close to gold standard as you can, given the financial, time, emotional resources that you have. So I know that's pretty wordy. Like I said, check out the blog. I also have a list of useful textbooks, especially for new grads, in that blog, which can help you if you're in a clinic that doesn't have a great medical library. Also, if you're in a clinic and you're really struggling in terms of getting that evidence-based medicine out there, or you're really not sure how much to do what your boss is saying versus how much to push your own agenda, and you just need a little extra help with that avenue, check out our consulting. You can check it out through the www.kickassvets.com webpage. And remember, as always, thank you for joining. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next time, and advocate for yourself, because you're the only one that will.